All right, so these seminars are from Krishna Book, 10th Canto, the Bhagavatam, EBT edition of 10th Canto. This particular chapter we're doing today, 19, was translated and purported after Srila Prabhupada's disappearance. And also the works of the commentaries of the Acharyas and the various other literatures of the Acharyas and the Goswamis. So we put it all together. And today we're going to be looking at Krishna swallowing the second forest fire and our other two presentations, and I haven't decided the order. Probably tonight we'll do Kaliya, and tomorrow morning we'll do Brahma Steals the Boys and Calves, or I might reverse that. This is the shortest one. So Bhaktivinoda Thakura talks about how each of the demon-killing or demon-chastising leelas of the Lord eradicates a particular anartha. Just like throughout the Bhagavatam, not every, but most of the stories will also have some sort of benediction. If you hear this story, if you read this story, if you meditate on the story, sometimes they're very specific. If you meditate on this story in the morning, of course, there's so many stories you'd have to meditate on in the morning. It would quickly become the afternoon before you finish meditating on all of them. But, you know, if you meditate on this story, you get such and such result. And some of the benedictions kind of dangled in the Bhagavatam seem practically material. You know, you'll get good wealth and nice children and things like that. But particularly Krishna's leelas in Vrindavan, the benedictions that we're getting is certain sort of attachments are being eradicated. So that's lovely because, for at least for most of us, or for some of us, or at least for me, maybe not for any of you, my heart's kind of dirty, and it's dirty with really like clogged up gunk. So many, 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 many years ago, when I was living in a Brahmacharini ashram as a Brahmacharini, I was staying in one room, and I thought that some of the black marks on the floor were just practically part of the floor. You know, I'd cleaned the room many times, and the black marks hadn't budged. And one day, I don't know what inspired me exactly, but one day I decided to find out if the black marks were truly part of the floor. And they weren't. And I was able to get them all off, you know, really scrubbing. Mm-hmm. Prabhupada talks about this with a pot. So I hope I'm not going to offend anyone by this one, but that he says that the bottom of the pots should be completely clean. Especially if you're cooking on gas, that's very difficult. Get all this carbon on the bottom of your pot. Prabhupada Swami says how the first 6 months that he was in the Hare Krishna movement, his job was scrubbing the pots, and he was told you have to get every single black spot off the inside and outside of the pots. But I'm sure we've been all been in a situation where we thought that some dirt was indelible and you found out you could actually get it off. Or you thought maybe it was part of the design. You know? And then you found out it was removable and there was something really nice underneath. So in order to have Krishna sit on the throne of our heart, Prabhupada says, chanting Hare Krishna, said this in a lecture in Geneva, he said, chanting Hare Krishna means you make a diamond throne in your heart and you invite Krishna to sit there and you bathe him with Ganga and Jamuna water and you offer him new dress and ornaments and various services. So it's very difficult to do that if your heart is all dirty. Just like I'm a guest here. And Nimai was saying, you know, there's an upstairs bathroom and a downstairs bathroom, and they're both clean. And they're really clean. Everything is sparkling. It looks like it's newly built. So generally, if you're going to invite a guest, you clean first. Some people don't. I've been to some places where they don't. But generally speaking, this is one of the things you have to deal with when you're a traveler, you know. Sometimes you're in Swargaloka and sometimes you're in Patalaloka. you never quite know until you get there what it's going to be, whatever it is. But usually, if you're going to have a guest, you clean. I think that's one of the reasons why the grihastas are enjoined to have guests. Because at least you're clean sometimes. Yes. So we want to, of course, Krishna's already in our heart. But if we want Krishna to manifest in our heart, wouldn't that be nice? I mean, we want to see Krishna, right? Everybody wants to see Krishna. At least in theory, you want to see Krishna. So Krishna's already right there. Isha Upanishad said he's very far, but he's also very near. He's right there. And so many times Srila Prabhupada will say that Krishna wants to talk to us. Which seems sort of inconceivable to most of us. I keep trying to talk to him and he doesn't answer. You know? But he wants to talk to us. Have you ever wanted to talk to somebody who was distracted? Or who didn't really want to hear what you have to say? Yeah, every day, yeah. Pradyumna Prabhu and I were just talking about that about 5 minutes earlier. You know, that because he does training. If you go into an organization, they have to want to be trained. Actually, in education, we learn that about 75% of the job of the teacher is just to get the students wanting to learn what you have to say. Prabhupada talked about this with book distribution. You have to create your market. You know, when I was first distributing Prabhupada's books, I was in O'Hare Airport. We were distributing Back to Godhead magazines, and we were dressed in saris. They weren't real saris. They were just pieces of polycotton cloth. We were all wearing saffron. All the women also were all wearing saffron. Heavy polycotton cloth, and it wouldn't stay on your head. You could, if you pinned it here, it would have pulled out all your hair. You know, so you had to pin it here, and then because the cloth was so heavy, it would move. And then we had these big, big nose rings, you know. I had one nose ring that was this big. I had to have a chain to keep it from flopping. And we had these big nose rings, you know. And the brahmachari, sometimes the color of the saffron kurta was a different color than the dhoti. And I remember one time some person came up to me and said, "You guys look like a bunch of clowns." I thought, how offensive. And then I sort of looked around and I thought, oh, he's right. Kind of look like a bunch of clowns. So we're dressed. Who knows how we were dressed anyway. And we just walk into people with a Back to Godhead and say, "Here, sir, here's a book about love of God." So we didn't sell very many because not very many people woke up in the morning saying, you know, "I want to find out how to love God." But hopefully, of course, I think many members of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness also don't wake up in the morning saying, you know, "I want to find out how to love God." So Krishna wants to talk to us, but actually, although we say we want to talk to him, we don't really want to hear him. We don't really want to hear what he has to say. We're not receptive. It's clogged up. Our heart is clogged with actually asat Krishna. Krishna means thirst. Sat means the temporary. We're thirsty for that which is temporary. We're hankering for things which are in opposition to Krishna. That doesn't mean just like we want a car or we want a new pair of shoes. That's not exactly what that means. But it means I want to enjoy separately from Krishna. I want to have a concept of myself as separate from Krishna. Therefore, we're not receptive to him speaking to us. So he's right there. He wants to speak to us. He wants to have a relationship with us. So I'm sure that all of us in our life have some person with whom we would like to have a close relationship, but that person doesn't want to have a close relationship with us. Everybody have at least one person in your life like that, that you'd like to be closer to, and they're just not receptive. And regretfully, you've had to kind of cross them off your list, partially or completely. But you would like, you know, you're hoping that this person, sometimes that person's a family member. I remember I had the situation with one of my sisters, that she and I had been extremely close growing up. She was 16 years older than I am, so she was almost like a second mother to me. We were extremely close. And then when I decided to join the Hare Krishna movement, then all of a sudden, she wasn't really interested in having a relationship with me anymore. And after a while, it got so extreme, she wouldn't even talk to me anymore. So I wanted to have a relationship with her, but I couldn't, you know, bang down the door. I couldn't go to her house and say, "Let me in, let me in." Finally, one of her children died, and then she was willing to talk to me. And when she was diagnosed with cancer, she was willing to see me. And right before she died, She actually let me into her house, which was sort of astonishing. She even gave me a present. But my point is, we have people like that. We have people that we care about, we love, we have some affection for, and they're not really interested, or they're not interested in having a kind of relationship that would be pleasing. Maybe they're interested in having a relationship, but not the kind we would like. So that's Krishna's position with us. He very much wants to have his relationship with us. He wants to talk to us. He wants to dance with us and play with us and be with us. And although we may be saying that we're interested, you know, we want the relationship very much on our terms. And therefore, he's not audible. He's not visible. Or he's slightly audible and slightly visible sometimes. You know, I feel like we're sitting on the stairs outside of his house, and every once in a while he opens the door and says, "Are you there? You know, where are you at now? Oh, can I exploit you?" You know. So we are enjoined by Srila Rupa Goswami to meditate on the... Also, can we have just quiet toys and not noisy toys? If that's enough. We are enjoined in the 8th verse of the Upadesh Amrita to meditate on Krishna's Astakalila Lila, which is an interesting instruction because, as far as I know, Srila Prabhupada nowhere clearly and explicitly delineates the Astakalila Lila. I mean, he talks about, but not, okay, Krishna does this at this time of day, and this is, that's in the works of the Goswamis or like Kavi Karnapur. But I don't recall any time that Srila Prabhupada very explicitly in any of his purports or any of his lectures. Maybe you can show me where I'm mistaken, but I don't recall any such time. Although Prabhupada gives the instruction, he repeats the instruction from Rupa Goswami, that one should meditate on the Astakalila Lila, Krishna's eightfold pastimes that go on in Goloka Vrindavan. How would we do that with just the books that Srila Prabhupada gave us? But in addition to meditating on the Astakalila Lila, one should also meditate on what's called the Nimitta Lila. And it's interesting, it's called that, which means occasional. Because Srila Prabhupada oftentimes explains that Krishna's Leelas in this material world are also eternal. They're eternal in the sense that they're always going on in some universe. Of course, yasya kinispatita kala matabalam yan jivanti lama vilaja jagannandanatha Vishnu or Mahansa yasya kala visesha. Whenever Mahavishnu breathes in, there's no more universes. So at least for that breathe-in time, Krishna's pastimes are not manifested. That breathe-in time is a terribly long time from our perspective. For Krishna's perspective, it's half of a breath. It's the inhalation of a breath. So Srila Prabhupada mostly explained these what called occasional pastimes. So those, I said, they're also called eternal. That Krishna has in the material world, in Gokula. And of course, very, very early in the movement, Srila Prabhupada gave us the Krishna book, which I find astonishing. Now, sometimes devotees say, we shouldn't meditate on Krishna's pastimes until we're pure. And I have a whole seminar on the 12th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. I just gave it, Bhaktivedanta Manor. I think it's up there on their site if you want to hear it, and if you want the PowerPoint, I can send it to you. On the difference between bhakti yoga and the yoga ladder. Now, the yoga ladder is, you start off with all these material desires, and you make them zero, and after they're zero, then you can engage in bhakti. But that's not our bhakti process. Our bhakti process is not that first I make everything zero, and then when I'm pure, then I can engage in bhakti. Our bhakti process is gradual and proportional. I decrease the material desires while I'm increasing the spiritual desires. And around here, you're at nishta, which is considered liberated. And at this point, Prabhupada says everything comes automatically one after another. And according to Madhurya Kadambani, eventually it goes like this, and your material desires are finished, and you're full of spiritual desires. So our way of becoming purified is by meditating on Krishna. That's how we become purified. It's not first I become purified and then I can meditate on Krishna. But our process of purification is meditating on Krishna. That is bhakti yoga. If you're trying to do something else, then it's not bhakti. If you think, first I'm going to purify my heart by dedicating all my activities and studying philosophy and performing austerities, that's other kinds of yoga. That's karma yoga or jnan yoga. And a few people, maybe you're trying to do jnan yoga. That bhakti means my process from the beginning. From the beginning, I meditate on Krishna, and particularly meditating on Krishna's pastimes in Gokula, in the material world. Why? Because those pastimes, each of those pastimes eradicates a particular anartha. Each of those pastimes take care of a particular kind of material attachment, a particular kind of material desire. So the idea is that our meditation on Krishna gradually intensifies in our ability to concentrate, our ability to hear, and to the extent to which those pastimes start to permeate our lives. So this is also explained in that purport to Nectar of Instruction, text 8. And that purport is expanded upon by Bhaktivinoda Thakur in Harinam Chintamani and Jaiva Dharma. Shiva Ramaraj also in his book Sudha Bhakti Chintamani, in the section on hearing, has a very nice section where he's bringing together all these different works of the acharyas. So we want to get to the point of samadhi, where we are absorbed in Krishna and Krishna's pastimes, right? Everybody understand that? It's not the end, but it's part of our goal. That is the state of a shakti on the platform of the mind and bhava on the platform of the soul. But in order to get to that point, we have to be hearing about Krishna's pastimes and doing our best to remember them throughout the day. They should come, as Prabhupada said, they should come naturally when we're chanting Hare Krishna. We're chanting Hare Krishna, we should naturally remember, oh, this is what Krishna looked like. This is his qualities. Just like I was talking about my sister. I'm just talking about her, I immediately remember her. That's natural. I remember what she looked like, what she acted like. So as soon as we say Krishna, we should immediately remember Krishna. And if you can't do that, or somebody who doesn't know anything about Krishna, you just hear Krishna's name. But naturally it should come. So hearing these pastimes has the effect of purifying our anarthas. Why? So we can start to really hear Krishna's pastimes. So eventually we can see Krishna's pastimes in our heart. First on the platform of the mind. And then eventually see Krishna's pastimes in our heart as they manifest directly from the spiritual world. Like Prabhupada says, spiritual television. That each of us has a television set in our heart. But the wires are corroded. So we try to turn it on, we get fuzz. Or, you know, if you're a little bit more advanced, you get a picture, but it's a fuzzy picture. It's not a clear picture. It's occasional. You ever have one of these connections that goes off and on and off and on? And I was recently in Prague. They gave me an internet connection, but I couldn't do anything. Because it would go on, and I'd see my email. And then I'd go to answer it, and the connection would go off. And then it would go on again, and I would get excited, and then I would try to do something, and again it would go off. And I said, this is ridiculous. So the connection in our heart, depending on where we are in devotional service, it may just be fuzzy. It may just be, you know, connecting. Or it may be an off and on thing, where there's occasionally a little glimpse, oh, there's Krishna, oops, gone again. You read something in the books or while you're chanting, oh, there's Krishna. You know, and gradually it becomes deeper and deeper. So that's what we're looking for. But to get there, my dear friends, we have to start. We have to be trying to connect. We have to be making an effort to connect. And yes, it's an effort. There'll be a day when it just comes naturally and spontaneously. But at the beginning, it's an effort. Why is it an effort in the beginning? Because we, out of our foolishness, we turned our back on Krishna. Now we become habituated to having our back turned on Krishna. It's like it says, Prabhupada says, if you read the Bhagavatam through the first 9 cantos, then you'll be a self-realized soul by the time you get to the 10th canto, and you can enter into Krishna's pastimes. So, you know, our Burjan Prabhu, he's now finished teaching the 12th canto. So he's taught all the way through over many, many, many years, probably way more than 12 years. Each verse, you know. He and Narayani, they're the only ones who've taught Bhagavatam at the Bhaktivedanta level. So I was recently taking prasadam with him in Vrindavan, and I said, so, did it happen? When you finished the 9th canto, did you become a self-realized soul? And he said, yes. He said, I realize I'm an idiot. So the reason that it takes us, the reason we have to make an intentional endeavor is that we have turned our back on Krishna. Exactly like a person who's become addicted to alcohol or heroin or tobacco even, or even coffee or tea, they may have to make an intentional endeavor to get free of that addiction. Whereas someone who's never become addicted, it's no endeavor at all. You know, I don't wake up in the morning and go, how am I going to not drink? How am I going to not smoke? Because I never got addicted. I don't even have to think about it, ever. Never. But someone who got addicted, they have to make an intentional effort. It's work. Prabhupada says, until nista, it's a hard struggle with determination. Of course, it's still blissful. Kevalan and Dakanda, it's still blissful. But it is work. Maybe blissful work, but it's still work. So as we enter into Krishna's pastimes, the idea is to make an intentional effort. There has to be some use of the will. That will not happen later on. But to get to the point where there's no use of the will, one has to go through the stage of using the will. Can't jump over that stage. Hopefully, the drug addict, the alcoholic, gets to a point where being without that intoxicant becomes the automatic default value. But to get to that point, you have to work. And I see this as a very practical demonstration of humility. I'm the one who's at fault. I'm the one who's done something wrong. Therefore, I'm the one who has to make some effort. So to really make some effort to enter into these leela, and then also to make some effort to remember these leelas. So we're looking just at 3 this weekend, but to make some effort during the day, during the week, to remember, and if these particular leelas that I picked, if they're not the ones that especially excite you, find one that excites you. Prabhupada said you can take just one leela and meditate on that over and over again. And it doesn't even have to be Krishna's leelas or even Krishna's leelas in Vrindavan. It can be any of the leelas in the Bhagavatam or Chaitanya Charitamrita. Any of them. Leelas about Krishna's devotees are as good as leelas about Krishna. And find one that you really, really like. And think about it. Let it come to your mind and dwell on it and dwell on the specifics of it. So this is the to hear. To talk about it, talk about Krishna's leela. Sometimes I think in ISKCON we're so afraid of being sahajis, we don't want to talk about Krishna. It's very peculiar. The International Society for Krishna Consciousness, where you're not supposed to talk about Krishna. So talk about Krishna. Don't be scared. Even if somebody doesn't like it, oh well. You don't need to worry about it. Talk about Krishna. Talk about what Krishna's doing. Otherwise, what are we talking about? Me, my family, the government, sports, my work, right? Mostly we're talking about ourselves. So to really deeply hear, really deep to talk about, at least sometimes, try it. You know, the more you do it, the easier it gets, and to remember. Okay. So this is a nice quote from Bhaktivinoda. He says, the devotee who worships the holy name should first petition the Lord for the strength to cast out all these unfavorable tendencies and should thus pray before Lord Hari on a daily basis. By doing this regularly, the devotee's heart will eventually become purified. Or Krishna has killed a number of demons which may arise in the kingdom of the heart. In order to destroy these problems, a devotee must cry very humbly before the Lord and admit defeat. Then the Lord will nullify all contaminations. So Bhaktivinoda Thakura says that the demons that Balaram kills, Prolambasura and Dainikasura, Balaram representing Guru, that those demons who represent ignorance and passion, we have to get out of our heart with great endeavor. But all the other demons, Krishna will kill them. We don't have to kill them. Isn't that nice? Shrinvitam swakata Krishna. Apunyan shavana kirtana. Riddhyantasta badrani vijunoti siritsita. Krishna will kill the demons, but you have to invite him. He will not do it automatically. Exactly like if one of your friends has a problem, you're not going to go fix it without their permission. You're just not. Or if you have a disease, a doctor will not come into your house in the middle of the night and stick some anesthetic on you without your permission and take out the disease. You have to go to the hospital. You have to go to the surgery, right? You have to voluntarily go. The doctor may tell you you have a disease, but you have to say, my dear doctor, I give you permission to give me treatment. I give you permission to operate. They're not going to tie you down. So Krishna will get out the demons, but we have to invite him. Okay, the particular anartha that is eradicated by this lila we're about to meditate on is that of conquering over Kali Yuga. Conquering over the bad qualities of Kali Yuga. So if any of us struggle with television, movies, nonsense on the internet, nonsense music, you know, or mindsets of Kali, if we become influenced by some of the materialistic propaganda of Kali, the selfishness, self-centeredness of Kali. So within our own heart, to get rid of this influence of Kali, and also to become empowered as preachers. So this particular pastime engages our warrior within to be preachers. Preachers doesn't only mean that you go out to the local Tesco with books, but that you're interested in spreading, although that's lovely, that you're also engaged in trying to help others to conquer over this influence of Kali. All right. Now we're going to enter into the lila. So as I'm sure you all remember, Krishna and the cowherd boys were playing one day, and one of the cowherd boys had been kept at home, and therefore a demon took advantage and took the mystic form of that cowherd boy. He was fighting with Krishna and Balaram, and he was on Krishna's team, so he lost, and the losers had to carry the winners on their shoulders. So he was carrying the winner, who was Balaram, and he thought, let me kill Balaram. But he didn't want to kill Balaram in the presence of Krishna. He thought it would be a little much. He wouldn't be able to handle Balaram and Krishna. So he took Balaram far away. So who here has ever been to Bandhiravan? Anyone here been to Bandhiravan in Vrindavan? Okay. So Bandhiravan, you cross the Yamuna, and there's a big, big banyan tree in Bandhiravan. That's a lovely story in one of the Puranas about how Radha and Krishna got married there. Officiated by Lord Brahma. So, and there was a family there I used to visit all the time. Unfortunately, a few years ago, the father slipped on a rock, hit his head, and immediately died. And just recently, the mother's just fallen off of a cart and immediately died. They have two now orphaned daughters. But we used to visit there regularly, and they would always make us rotis and sabji right out of their wheat, with the wheat from their field, and subjis from their field, and buttermilk from their cow. So that's in Bandhiravan, across the Yamuna. So Pralambasura carried Balaram across the Yamuna to Bandhiravan, and that was where Balaram killed him. And after Balaram killed him, everybody else went to the spot. So all the cowherd boys, and they brought all their cows. Now, they didn't only have cows. Anyone know what other animals they had? So we wrote about the story in one of our children's books, Safe from the Forest Fire. So they also had goats and buffalo. They had cows, goats, and buffalo. So the cowherd boys brought the cows, goats, and buffalo across the Yamuna to Bandhiravan to congratulate Balaramaji. So they were very, very happy that Balaram had killed this demon. And to celebrate, they were playing. And you know what it's like when you're playing. You may not notice anything else. They were absorbed. Now, in modern psychology, they call this flow. There was a researcher, just a solo, Mikhail Csikszentmihalyi, and he did his wonderful research on flow. That flow is when work and play merge. When your work is play and your play is work. When you're totally absorbed. Just reading a lovely quote from Prabhupada when he said, doing devotional service, you should never feel tired. That doesn't mean you don't need physically to sleep, but it means you regret sleeping. Of course, sometimes on a high platform, you may not need physically to sleep, but it means you don't want to go to sleep. You're so absorbed in your service that you're just, oh, do I have to sleep? Do I have to take prasadam? I'll take prasadam in another hour. Oh, another hour, another hour. I'll go to sleep later. I'll go to sleep later. So that's flow. So, of course, in Goloka Vrindavan and Gokula Vrindavan, Krishna's associates, they're constantly in this state. And Prabhupada explains that that's one reason the demons would come every day, because otherwise they'd never have lunch. They'd be so absorbed in playing. So the demon would come and interrupt their playing, so they would eat. And Krishna doesn't want to come back. Even Madhya Yasoda, you know, she's calling him, come back. He doesn't want to come. He turns around and goes back. The cowherd boys said, no, you come here. So the cowherd boys became so absorbed in their playing, but they had another service to do too, and that was to watch the animals. So the animals were looking for fresh grass. So it's explained that this is indicative. Of course, these cows, goats, and buffaloes are all pure devotees. But this is indicative of the general tendency of the conditioned jiva. We're always looking for fresh grass someplace else. You know, and there we are with Krishna. And maybe we'll go over here, maybe we'll go over there. What about this, what about that? That we get distracted and we wander off. So the animals got distracted and they wander off. So it says they were greedy for sense enjoyment and suffered for their whimsy. And they wandered off independently. Let's go find some pleasure independently of Krishna. Now, they walked about 15 kilometers, 5 kroshas north, to a place that's has 3 names. It's called the Mandiyari, or the Munjaranya, or the Ishikatava. Usually it's called the Ishikatava. So they went to the Ishikatava forest. And as they wandered further and further, and you know how this gets also sometimes, you wander further and further, and then you kind of get lost. This happened to me in central London. I'm saying it's Soho. This happened to me in central London the other day. You know, all of a sudden I didn't know where I was anymore. At least if you ask anybody, where's Soho Square? Where's Oxford Street? you can get back. So they were lost. Now, not only were they lost, but they were, in looking for the fresh grass, they came to a sugarcane field that had very sharp leaves. And they went there looking for fresh grass, and they got stuck. They couldn't get out. If they tried to get out, they would be cut by the sharp leaves and the sharp canes. So they became trapped. So does this happen to us sometimes? You know, we're looking for some enjoyment. We wander off. We get lost. And then we get stuck. Now, not only do they get stuck, so they're lost. They're stuck. And if that wasn't bad enough, then there was a fire. So they were feeling very, very thirsty from the heat of the fire. And plus, they were scared. So they're scared and thirsty and stuck, and they've got these sharp leaves, and they're lost. All just looking for some fresh grass. That's exactly what happens to us. There is some fresh grass. Pretty soon, we're lost. We're stuck. We're thirsty, we're in danger. All right, back to Bandiravan. So the boys are playing, and all of a sudden one of the boys notices, oops, where are the animals? It's quite interesting that when Krishna was on the planet, little children helped with the livelihood. Of course, that went on to the Industrial Revolution, and at that point we started having laws for compulsory education for everybody, because at that point helping with the livelihood started meaning going to a factory and being in a factory for 12 hours a day and getting, you know, possibly deafened by the machines and getting your fingers cut off by the machines and etc., which wasn't a proper place for a child. So it was to combat that that compulsory education has been instituted in most of the countries of the world. And as a little aside here, as an educator, compulsory education for everybody hasn't necessarily been good for everybody. It hasn't necessarily benefited the children, their families, or the world. Trying to force all children to be in school from a young age until they're a teenager, all learning exactly the same thing. It doesn't comport with even what educators know about individuality. And they talk about differentiated education, but differentiated within like a little narrow, you know. Everybody's got to learn calculus. I'm sure you asked, why do I need to learn calculus? I have never used my calculus, not one day in my life. Nor did I ever use learning the Latin names for the different parts of the root of a dahlia flower. So, Hare Krishna. So, but children in those times, they were actually doing something constructive. They were learning their livelihood, and they had fun. It was kind of astonishing, though. I really can't imagine. So they were about 6 years old here, 6, 7 years old. I really can't imagine a 6, 7-year-old child sending them out to the forest to take care of the animals. And these were the big cows. And before they were 6, they were taking care of the calves. So again, I can't imagine 4 or 5-year-old children. So little Charu here, he's 5, right? Because you imagine sending him out to the forest for the day to take care of calves with just other children. And there's a river. You know, there's a river. And there's monsters, too. Actual monsters.
There's a child protection policy.
Yeah. He'd be arrested by the government if he tried to do that now. And Mother Yasoda was hesitant, you know. She would say, Krishna, I don't want you to go out there. We have so many servants. And he said, no, I like going out. But, I mean, it wasn't just Krishna. That was the way that children were raised in those days. Pretty astonishing. All right, so the children had their duties. They had their responsibilities to take care of the cows, the goats, and the buffalo. And they were so busy playing, the animals wandered off, and they felt very regretful. So we may also feel like that. You know, I have my duties to do for Krishna, and sometimes we're neglectful. Sometimes we get absorbed. Of course, they were absorbed also in their duties for Krishna. They were absorbed in their playing with Krishna. But sometimes it's like that too. We're so absorbed in reading Prabhupada's books, we forget about the other work we have to do. We get so absorbed in our chanting. Oops, you know, I have something else I have to do for Krishna. This was Mother Yasoda's quandary. And she was giving Krishna her own bodily milk and the cow's milk on the stove. Actually, the cow's milk on the stove was thinking, Mother Yasoda's milk is unlimited and Krishna's belly is unlimited. When am I going to get a chance to do service? And it became so ecstatic in thinking about it that it was dancing out of the pot. But anyway, Prabhupada, very nice purport. He says that Mother Yasoda, you know, her breast milk was for Krishna and the milk on the stove was for Krishna. What to do first? And you say Krishna will give you intelligence. So anyway, sometimes we're so absorbed in one service, we may be neglecting another service. Prabhupada wrote a letter, I think to Lakshmimoni, he said, this requires some common sense. Don't do one thing at the neglect of another. So that's what the cowherd boys did. They were playing with Krishna at the neglect of taking care of the animals, and then they felt very remorseful. And they thought, oh, we've lost our livelihood. This is our service. And Sridhar Swami comments, the Bhagavatam commentator Sridhar Swami, comments that Krishna and Balaram were not remorseful, just the other cowherd boys. And Sanatana Jiva Goswami says that Krishna and Balaram wanted to experience a new pastime, and therefore they arranged for their animals to wander off and the boys to feel remorseful. So we can understand these leelas on many levels. We can understand it in a level that relates to us as a conditioned soul, and we can also understand it on the level of leela. Just like Prabhupada talks about Lord Ramachandra searching for his wife Sita in lamentation. And he says we can understand this on the material level, that when you become attached to someone in this world, it will lead to lamentation. And we can understand it on the spiritual level, that they were experiencing Vipralamba Bhav. They were experiencing love and separation. So it operates, we're giving two levels, actually operates on hundreds of millions of levels. And the boys also had great love for the cows. It wasn't just that they thought, this is my job, this is my livelihood, I have to do my livelihood. But they really loved the cows. The cows are also Vaishnavas. The cows and the goats and the buffalo, they're all Vaishnavas many times. Prabhupada says Krishna's embracing Radharani and he's also embracing the cows. I remember years ago one book distributor leader giving a class. Those who go and distribute books will become gopis and those who don't will all become rocks. Mm. I've been through some pretty crazy things in the Hare Krishna movement. So actually in the spiritual world, Krishna loves the rocks as much as he loves the gopis. There's not a difference. Krishna's loving everyone, absolutely. Prabhupada said you're cleaning the floor or you're bathing the deity. It pleases Krishna equally. So they loved the cows. But they couldn't find them. They couldn't find them. This is also a very interesting point. And we'll look at this also in the story of Brahma stealing the boys and calves. So we'll discuss it again at that time. Apparent failure in devotional service. So you want to do some service for Krishna and you're failing. It doesn't work out. You try to build a temple and you can't raise the money or you can't buy the property. Or Srila Prabhupada tried to start a center in Jhansi before he came to America. And I would say we could categorize it more or less as a failure. I mean, he made one disciple, he had some programs there, but it never really got off the ground, and then the governor's wife took it away. To me, the real exemplary failure is Jatayu. So Jatayu wanted to stop Ravana from stealing Sita, and he failed. He was killed. Of course, he succeeded in that. He was able to tell Ram and Lakshman who took Sita and where he had gone. And he was successful in that he gave his life for Ramachandra. But as far as what he was trying to accomplish, he failed. He wasn't able to do it. So this happens. It will definitely happen. Sometimes we think, you know, if Krishna gives me, if I get an order from Guru or I get an order from Krishna, then it will be successful. I hear this so often. Well, I want to know if it's my desire or Krishna's desire. Why? Because I'm thinking, well, if it's my desire, it'll fail. If it's Krishna's desire, it will succeed. Not necessarily. Non-devotees have a lot of their own desires succeed in terms of external results. And just because it's Krishna's order doesn't mean that externally you're going to be successful. It just doesn't. Krishna told the cowherd boys, go beg from the brahmanas. And the brahmanas didn't even answer them. And they came back and they said, what's going on? You told us. And Krishna said, oh, it's the way of begging. Now ask their wives. So it was a success because it pleased Krishna. Why did it please Krishna? Because the wives are so much more glorified in contrast to their husband's refusal than had they been if they were asked in the first place. Isn't that a fact? So the so-called failure, Prabhupada's failure in India over many, many years to preach before he came to the West, so much more glorifies the Western devotees. Doesn't it? Prabhupada changed his policy. He says, we'll convince the Indians by convincing the Westerners. And it's true. You know, that's actually what happened. That the Indians were thinking, let us be like the Americans and the Europeans. When they saw the Americans and the Europeans taking up their traditional culture, they're like, wait, what are we missing? Wait a minute. So ultimately, if you're serving Krishna, there is no such thing as failure. Because if you're trying to please Krishna And Krishna is pleased that is success. But on the external platform, it may look like failure. Therefore, Krishna told Arjuna, fight for the sake of fighting without considering gain or loss, victory or defeat, honor or dishonor. Sometimes when you're working for Krishna, you will be dishonored. Haridas Thakur, they tried to kill him. Sometimes you'll be dishonored. Sometimes you'll be a failure. But if you're trying to please Krishna, that's a success. So at least for a while, the cowherd boys were failures. They couldn't find the animals. They were looking and looking and looking. First of all, they had failed in the sense that they let them wander off. And now they couldn't find them. And the boys became also very tired and very thirsty. Finally, the cowherd boys, they saw that there was a trail. There was a place where the cows and goats and buffalo had eaten the grass. And also where they had pressed the grass down with their hooves. Now, normally, the grass in Vrindavan would just grow back up again. But in order to facilitate this, Leela had stayed down. So they were able to follow these footprints. And finally, you know, they saw the animals trapped in this, came from a great distance. And then Krishna called them with a thundering voice, filled with love, very commending. He called the names of the cows. So you know that Mahaprabhu, at one point he was chanting the names of the gopis, for which he got criticized. And here Krishna's calling the names of his cows. And Sanatana Goswami says this is Sankirtan. So Krishna also is engaging in Sankirtan. So, you know, it's described in Krishna book that Krishna also has japa beads. You know that? And Krishna has japa beads? You know what they're made of? Anybody know what they're made of? No? They're made of jewels. And what does he use them for? He uses them to count his cows. So each bead represents a different kind of cow, different color shape kind of cow, because the cows are in groups. And then he calls their name. And then the cows respond with great joy. And that's how they're specifically, because Krishna was calling. And they heard the voices and they saw them in the distance, and that's how they found the animals. And Krishna called the name of each cow. Even though in each goat and each buffalo, even though there were, you know, hundreds of thousands of them. So Krishna has a personal relationship with each devotee. We'll get into this more with the Leela with Brahma stealing the boys and the calves. But Krishna has a personal relationship with each of us. And he's wanting that relationship with each of us. And he's very personal in his dealings with us. You know, we as jivas cannot do that. If we're speaking to a group of 100,000 people, you know, we can't even make eye contact with each of them. We have to speak of really having a personal relationship with each of them. What's the limit? Sociologists have studied the limit. I think it's 150. Pretty sure it's 150. There's some organizations that never get a group more than that number. Is it 150? You familiar? What is the limit into which we can have connections? Anyway, there's some limit as to which under which we can have a genuine personal connection. And there's a number of companies, I don't remember right now, I'd have to look it up, where they never allow any branch of their company to get beyond that limit. So if it gets beyond the limit, they'll start another branch. Because they find otherwise they lose the connection. But Krishna can have a personal connection with an unlimited number of living entities. He doesn't have a limit. So the cows are really, cows, goats, and buffalo are really happy. They know they're going to be saved. Now, they haven't been saved yet. But they know they're going to be saved. So as we progress in Krishna consciousness, Prabhupada said the devotee becomes very happy because they know they're going back to home, back to Godhead. Even though they may still be locked up in the material world. We were talking about Madhurya Kadambini. How as the material desires go down, the spiritual desires go up. When you get to around this point, from Madhurya Kadambini, it looks like 40% gone. But Prabhupada, when he gives a percent, he'll say either 50% or 75% material desires gone. Right? Nasti Prayeshu Abhadreshu Nicham Bhagavata Seveya Bhagavata Uttama Sloke Bhakti Bhavati Naistuki. When they're not completely gone. At that point, one is considered liberated. Now, one's not really liberated. There's still some effect. I think of it like you're let out of the prison and you're put on probation. You know? You're not in the prison anymore, but you've got to check in with your probation officer. You're not exactly free. I mean, sometimes in America, when a person is in that state, they can't leave the state that they're in. They may be restricted to a particular geographical location. And if you violate your probation, you know, you can be back in the prison. You're not fully a free citizen. But you're a free citizen, but not quite. So the cows, goats, and buffalo were going to be free. There is Krishna. It's going to be done. Of course, this was very quick with the kings imprisoned by Jarasandhar. Wow, that was a long time. So Jarasandhar had imprisoned these kings, tens of thousands of kings, and they had sent a messenger to Krishna, please save us. And they had argued with Krishna. They had said, Karmadi nirdahati kintu cha bhakti bhajam, we're your devotees. We don't have any karma. How can we be imprisoned for karma? We don't have any karma. And paritranaya sadunam vinashaya tuju skritam. You're supposed to be saving the pious. You come to reestablish dharma. How can we be suffering in adharma? They were convincing him. And Krishna said, yeah, I'll save you. And then, oh, you should come for Maharaj Yudhisthira's Rajasuya Yajna. Oh, what should we do? My dear Uddhava, what should we do? And Uddhava says, well, if we go to do the Rajasuya Yajna, then as part of doing the Yajna, we'll have to conquer all the kings, we'll have to conquer Jarasandhar. So the Rajasuya Yajna will include saving all those kings. Okay, great. My dear messenger, go tell the kings they are saved. You're saved. Did Krishna just show up? What did he do? First he went to Hastinapur. He didn't go alone. He went with his whole retinue. I would imagine it would take a while just for them all to pack. 16,108 queens with all their children. Each of them had at least 10 children. All of their tutors, all their teachers they had to bring with them. And the laundry servants and the cleaning servants and the cooking servants. And many other branches of the family of the Yadu. It was a huge, unbelievable procession. And they had to make road pathways, and I'm sure they had to make bridges or boats. And it took, let's assume, it took weeks, if not months, between the time that they said, let's go to Hastinapur, and the time they actually got there. And then when they got there, then King Yudhisthira says, all right, we have to notify everybody. Because the process was you notified all of the subordinate kings. It was something like cities and states and a country in terms of an emperor. So there, and each place was run by someone called a king. Instead of like in America, we call someone in charge of a town as a mayor and someone in charge of the state as a governor. But they were all called kings. So you could be a king of a city. You could be the king of a state. So they went to call all the subordinate kings. We're going to have the Rajasuya Yajna. And you can either pay a tax or fight. This was your choice. So pretty much everybody paid the tax. Not very many people fought. So people paid most of their taxes just locally. And then, like, I know in America you have to pay local, state, and federal taxes. I don't know what it's like here. But in Vedic times, your taxes were all paid locally, and all the services were administered locally. But then the local government paid to a higher government. Anyway, so that took a long time. Yudhisthira sent his four younger brothers out in the four directions. I believe it took them about 1 year to go out in all the directions and say, pay or fight, pay or fight. Maharaj Yudhisthira wants to do the Rajasuya to declare him as the emperor. Do you accept him as the emperor? It took a long time. And they came back and they said, everybody has surrendered except for Jarasandha. So then they had to go out to Jarasandha's kingdom and they had to go there. And then they go there and then they come in disguise and they beg a duel with Jarasandha, and Jarasandha and Bhima are fighting. This is another instance of success and failure. Krishna tells Bhima, go fight with Jarasandha. Krishna's personally standing there. And is Bhima successful? No. How long are they fighting? 28 days. And then Bhima says, I can't do it. And then Krishna infuses him with his energy and gives him a hint. So how long were those kings waiting? They were waiting for probably about 18 months between the time Krishna says, I'm coming, don't worry, and the time he actually came. Or what about when Vasudeva and Devaki just got married and they're going to Vasudeva's home and they were under the tyranny of Kamsa and there's a voice from the sky, Devaki's eighth child will kill you. You know, well, you don't have eight children in 8 days. It takes about 8 years to have eight kids. And then did Krishna immediately kill Kamsa? No, he left. Of course, they asked him to leave. They said, Krishna, we're afraid Kamsa's going to kill you, which is interesting. Well, Vasudeva and Devaki didn't say, oh, great, Krishna, now you're here. You're going to kill Kamsa. I mean, he could have. He killed Putana when he was 3 months old. But that wasn't what they said. They said, oh, Krishna, now you're here, Kamsa will kill you. What will we do? So then he went to Vrindavan, and he stayed there for, sometimes it says 11 years, sometimes 16 years. So even if you want to say 11, 11 plus 8 is 19. If you want another, add another 5, 24. So 19 to 24 years between the time they're told Krishna's going to kill Kamsa and the time he actually does it. And Kamsa was harassing people even before that announcement in the sky. So, if we want to enter into Krishna's pastimes, this is what it means. And if you don't like that, if you just want everything to be peaceful, there's always the Brahmajyoti. That option is available. You know, if you hear this stuff and you go, oh my God. Is that what it's going to be like when I enter into Krishna's lila? Oh, you know, you can always merge into the Brahman, and there it's just peace. There's no demons, there's no waiting, there's no suspense, it's just peace. Even Vaikuntha is pretty peaceful. So in Vaikuntha, it's just like a mega heaven. But Krishna's pastimes are full of adventure. And don't we like adventure? Don't people pay to see movies where the hero saves everyone at the last moment? I mean, I remember movies like that. You know, the world's going to blow up, and there's a ticker, right? And they're defusing the bomb. I don't remember what movie that was, but I remember seeing one like that. You know, they're diffusing the bomb that's going to blow up the world, and it's ticking down, and the ticker says, like, 3 seconds when they diffuse the bomb. Right? Or the girl's tied to the railroad track, and the guy unties her just as the train's coming. The train's, like, you know, just a few feet away. So Krishna also likes to do that. The cows are just there. There was a fire. Yeah, they were just about to be burned by the fire, and then he saves them just at the last moment. And the devotees are relishing this. They're not thinking, he said he was going to come, where is he? But they're thinking Krishna likes to play the hero. They're having bliss. And just like people pay their money to go see a movie where they're in anxiety. You know the hero's going to win. I mean, you already know when you go to... I remember we used to watch the Superman on television. You know Superman's going to win. Could you imagine if he didn't? You know, there'd be a huge protest. But you know he's going to win at the last minute and you don't know how he's going to win. And we're enjoying, correct? We're enjoying. So the devotees, they're enjoying. Okay, so now everybody was happy. Cows and Krishna and the cowboys, they're helping, they're moving the canes, they're getting the animals out, you know, and they're all happy and they're all rejoicing. And they start to walk back to Bandiravan. So remember, there was a fire. So now this fire very quickly surrounds them in all directions. And the description is, with the wind carrying it like a chariot driver. So, you know, wind can move fire very, very quickly. And it's in all eight directions, even above them. And the flames were shooting out of the fire like meteors. So Sanatana Goswami says the fire was a demon friend of Pralamba. Or some of the acharyas say that the fire wanted to associate with Krishna. So this also happens. You know, we're in some dangerous situation. Krishna saves us, and then, boom, something else happens. Right? So first Balaram killed Pralamba, and then they lost the animals, then they find the animals, then they save the animals, and then there's a fire. So constant adventure. So the boys were described as like someone afraid of death. Why like? Because they're never afraid of death. The soul never dies. And the coward boys are there in their spiritual bodies. There's no question of death. But they had this mood as the adventure. You know, not like, oh, we're not going to die. It's okay. Oh, we're going to die. Krishna save us. So what were they afraid of? They were actually afraid of something. They were afraid of being separated from Krishna. There they are with Krishna. We burn up in the fire, we won't be with Krishna anymore. And they were also scared for the cows. They thought, we're supposed to take care of the cows. How are we going to take care of the cows? And they have this mood of being very dependent on Krishna. Krishna, you have to take care of us. So they call for Krishna and Balaram. Why? Only Krishna can save, but Balaram can help. So first they ask Krishna and Balaram together, and then they just ask Krishna, because they have special affection for Krishna. So we're always asking the Vaishnavas to save us. And Guru Balaram represents the original Guru. But the Vaishnavas save us and the Guru saves us because they connect us with Krishna. Only Krishna can save us. Sometimes people ask, when talking about Guru Tattva, who delivers? Only Krishna can deliver. Only Krishna can deliver. And they remembered Gargamuni's words that Krishna would save the devotees who were dependent on him. So they had faith. Yes, Krishna will save us. So then what did Krishna tell the boys to do? He told them to close their eyes. Now, some places it says that Krishna didn't speak the words, close your eyes, but that he spoke it with his eyes. Krishna speaks a lot with his eyes. I mean, even we kind of speak with our eyes. But Krishna really speaks with his eyes. So much fun, isn't it? Yeah. Isn't it fun when someone can just speak to you with a gesture and you understand it? When you feel that, like, connection? You know, somebody just goes, and you get it? So Krishna really likes this. Krishna and the devotees, they really like this kind of connection, this kind of yoga, this kind of communication, where they can speak indirectly. And Krishna loves speaking in layers of meaning. He does it all the time. All the shastras like that also. In Bhagavad Gita, you never get to the end of it. It gets deeper and deeper and deeper. Rupa Goswami describes nectar devotion, how Radha and Krishna are talking about Vesh, you know. Where's your residence? Where's your fragrance? Where's your clothes? He likes to speak in different kinds of meaning, and different people will hear different things. So he likes to also speak with his eyes. So why did Krishna tell the boys to close their eyes? Well, one reason would be that Krishna didn't want them to see what he was going to do, that he was going to drink the fire. And if they saw that, they would rush forward and try to help him. So he didn't want them to be scared. Also, he wanted to play a trick and bring them all back to Bandirvan instantly. He didn't want them to see how he did it. And actually, Srila Prabhupada said this, but he spoke it with his eyes. And they might think, how will closing our eyes help? And Krishna says, don't be afraid. Krishna often says, "Not, don't be afraid. Mokshi shyami ma suchaha. Don't worry, don't have any fear. The essence of our material life is fear. The primary emotion we feel in material life is fear. And just a little side note, whenever we're angry, 99% of the time it's because we're afraid of something. If you want to have one clue to deal with anger, look underneath the anger for a fear. And just even naming the fear often dissolves the anger. Don't ask me why, but it seems to. Quite often. Maybe because when you name the fear, as soon as you name it, you see that it's absurd. I'm not sure exactly. It seems to be very effective. And it can also be effective in dealing with others, if you can try to figure out what they're afraid of, to dissipate their anger. Or at least it helps you to be, you have some empathy for them. Even if it doesn't help them directly, it will help you when you're dealing with them not to be so affected by their anger. And so he told them not to have any fear. And the boys, when they closed their eyes, they were thinking, because they don't really think of Krishna as God. I mean, every once in a while, they kind of know he's God. Even the gopis, when they're looking for Krishna, they said, you know, you're not really the son of Mother Yasoda, you're really the super soul in everyone's heart. So they kind of know, but they generally forget. It's not something that's right there in their consciousness. And often they forget completely. You know, I'm sure that if you're the queen's son, that you just sometimes, as my mother, you know, you're not constantly aware that it's the queen. You know, it's not like you don't know. But it's not something that's right. If you're sitting down and just having tea and playing a game or something, you know, it's not like right there in your consciousness. So the boys were thinking, Krishna can use some gems and mantras and herbs to stop this fire, but in order for his magic to be effective, it has to be done in secret. And that's why he's asking us to close our eyes. Because if we see the procedure, it won't work. So then Krishna swallows the fire. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that Krishna had a thirst for the fire. He wanted to taste fire. So we know a lot of people like this. When we were at Govinda's the other day, a friend of mine was there with her husband and her cousin brother and his wife from India. And her brother and his wife was their first time out of India. So they got them some of the prasadam from Govinda's and they said, oh, we don't like this. Well, why don't you like it? Oh, it's not spicy enough. Yeah. So I've been to places where if you tell them just a little chili, you still can't eat it. And you're wondering, how do they eat this stuff? Actually, I have one devotee friend whose idea of dessert at the end of the meal is chili powder and salt. And he'll just eat the chili powder and salt. I've seen him put chili powder on cake. So even materially, there are people who have a taste for fire. I personally don't get that, by the way. That's not my taste. But Krishna also has a taste for fire. So he actually wanted to, and when Krishna wants to eat fire, he really eats fire. He doesn't just eat, you know, chili peppers. He actually eats fire. And also to show Brahma and the other demigods how much he loves his friends. That he loves his friends, that he's even willing to eat fire for them. You know, that's love. I mean, this material world, there's a limit to our love, generally speaking. Generally. There's, you know, I'll sacrifice this, but okay, I'm not going to sacrifice that. That's too much. We're always astonished when we read about someone who sacrificed their life for people that they love. You know, it's so unusual. We were so moved. So I remember a story. I don't know if I can tell this. But anyway, so a story of this family where they would go to school by horse cart. This was in America. And it was up in the northern part of America in the winter. So the older sister was taking her younger brother and sister to school in a horse and buggy. So this was obviously quite some time ago. And when they were at school, they were notified that there was a blizzard. We don't have blizzards here. But you all know what a blizzard is? Okay. Can you relate at all? So a blizzard up in the northern, and they'll come very fast. And when blizzard's coming, I mean, you don't even have strong rain here very much. Most of your rain, you have a lot of rain, but you don't have like heavy rain here often, very unusual. But if you've ever been in a heavy rainstorm, sometimes you can't see. Mm-hmm. Like if you're in a car, you actually can't see. So a blizzard can be like that. The snow can be whirling and you really can't see anything. And it can pile up very, very quickly. And of course, there was already snow in the ground. I think this was in Wyoming. So as they're coming back to their house, they couldn't see anything. They couldn't see where they were going. They got off the path, got off the road. and the cart got stuck. And actually, they weren't very far from a home, but they couldn't see any home. And you're not going to just walk in the snow. So they thought, better to stay by the cart. It can't be too far from the road. So they're waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting. And nobody's coming, nobody's coming. And pretty soon it's getting dark. So the older sister, who was, I think she was 15, she told her little brother and sister, you know, she took her coat, she put it out, and she said, you stay under my coat. And she told them, you stay awake. And again, I don't know if I can tell a story. It's hard for me to tell a story. So she was telling them to stay awake, and she had them singing, and she said, even if I fall asleep, you don't you fall asleep. Anyway, so there's a monument to her, how she died saving her little brother and sister. So that's very astonishing. But most of us aren't willing to do something like that. Most of us are much more interested in saving ourselves when it comes down to it. You know, we'll push away even the people who are dear to us and think about ourselves. So Krishna is not like that. Krishna is willing to do anything for his devotees. So Krishna was willing to swallow the fire for his friends. And of course, the devotees don't like to hear about Krishna swallowing fire. So it said that Yogamaya drank the fire and turned the fire into a cooling beverage. So we have different of the acharyas, they see this differently. You know, some of them are saying, oh, Krishna wanted to drink fire. Some of them are saying, no, Krishna doesn't drink fire. That would hurt him. Yogamaya must have turned it into a cooling beverage. Or Krishna drank fire because he's such a hero for his friends. And some of them say the fire got scared and became a cooling drink so Krishna wouldn't retaliate. So the boys had gone practically unconscious, the boys and the animals. And then they understood to open their eyes, and so it may be that Krishna gave them an order, open their eyes, or it may be that they felt the fire was gone and they took their own initiative to open their eyes. And what did they see when they opened their eyes? That they were back the 15 kilometers and they were in Bandirvan by the Yamuna. How did that happen? And of course, remember how thirsty they had been? Remember the animals had gotten really thirsty in the fire and the boys got really thirsty looking for the animals? They didn't bring like water bottles. So now they're back at the Yamuna by the Bandirvan, so they're all drinking the Yamuna water. And they're thinking, wow, Krishna's really amazing. Maybe he's one of the devas. And then they thought, wow, if he's a deva and we're his friends, maybe we're devas too. So they were just, it didn't make them feel awe of Krishna like fear. It just made them think, we've got a great buddy. And we must be great too for his buddies. Whoa, you know? So there is a kind of transcendent pride that's not exploitive. That's not, I'm better than you. That I'm going to lord it over than you. But wow, I'm Krishna's friend. And then after they drank the water, by that time, it was the end of the day. So then it was time to go back to Vrindavan. So as they're coming back to Vrindavan, Krishna plays his flute in a very special way. And all of the young gopis like, oh, there's Krishna playing his flute. And their own separation from Krishna was relieved. And when they get back, the cowherd boys, and this will be important in the Brahma pastime, the cowherd boys, as they did every day. Guess what Krishna did today? So if we want to enter into Gokula, which is the first step to entering into Goloka, we should also think, guess what Krishna did today? What did Krishna do today? Usually we're thinking, what did I do today? What did my kid do today? Or what did my friends do today? Or what did some sports hero do today? What did Krishna do today? Even what did Krishna do in my life today? That's something. That's still what did Krishna do today. And as everyone heard what Krishna did that day, they increased in affection. So they all had unlimited affection for Krishna, but it's always increasing. That's what we want, isn't it? Don't we want relationships of love and affection that are always increasing? Materially, my dear friends, that doesn't usually happen. Materially, you know, when you have a little baby like this, you're absorbed in your baby, or when she was first born, right? When your baby's first born, you're thinking about them constantly. You're even waking up in the middle of the night. Is she breathing? Isn't it? I tell you, when she gets to be 34, you won't be like that anymore. I'm not always calling up my kids, you know. Are you breathing? I think about them, but not like that. The attachment weakens over time. You may still love them and you may still feel affection for them, but it's not that intensity. Or between men and women, it's also like that. You know, when you first, if any of you have ever actually been in love with somebody, it's really intense. You feel like you'd swallow fire for them, or you'd walk off a cliff or whatever. You can't stop thinking about them. And the intensity decreases. They say after about 1.5, 2 years. You may still have a lot of love and affection for them, but not that kind of madness. But the love for Krishna goes on increasing and increasing and increasing and increasing. And then this is the end of the summer and the start of the rainy season with the conclusion of this pastime. So I hope you enjoyed this. So this is actually a very short pastime. I think it's only about like half a page or something. Krishna book, but there's still so much depth, and of course we could have spoken for another, could have spoken for days actually on this one, isn't it? You know, so many things, we just kind of touched the surface on this one, Leela. And by meditating on this Leela, one gets the strength to overcome the temptations of Kali Yuga and to help others overcome the temptations of Kali Yuga. So if you find yourself dealing with any of the difficulties of Kali Yuga, you can remember this pastime. Also, we might note that if you have any bad habits, you can remember the pastime of Krishna kicking the cart. So, and if you have a bad habit that's related to Kali Yuga, you remember both of the Leelas. And it's very effective. It's very effective. It actually works. That if you're struggling with this in Artha and you say, Krishna, please come and take care of the forest fire. And cry like the cows in the sugar cane. Kali's bittering me. Or the boys, when the fire surrounded them. Krishna, Krishna, Krishna and Balaram, save me. Krishna likes to play a hero. He enjoys it. Even men in this world like to be heroes. It's pleasurable. I mean, women do too, but men particularly. It's part of the male psychology. Want to be a hero. It's pleasurable. So you can give Krishna the opportunity to play a hero. He likes it. Krishna, save me! Yes, here I am. I'm coming. Questions, comments, additions, subtractions, corrections, chastisements. Yes?
When Krishna leaves Vrindavan to go to Mathura to fight with Gansa, I thought he was, how old was he exactly?
I don't know.
I thought he was probably about 10 or something.
Because some of the acharyas say he was 11 and some say he was 16.
Because he had Rasa Lila the night before, didn't he? Isn't it so that the Rasa Lila took place and then the next day he went to fight?
I don't know, I've never read that. Could be, but I've not read that. Anyway, some of the acharyas say he was 11 and some say he was 16. Take your pick. And sometimes they try to harmonize it in various ways. Because Krishna's eternal age as Kishora is a little less than 16. It's like 15 3/4. Mm-hmm. And in Goloka Vrindavan, he's always there as a 15-year-old, not quite 16. A little shy of 16. Anything else?
From the book, what? Shower of Divine Compassion.
Shower of
Divine Compassion.
Divine Compassion.
I haven't seen that.
But basically, what you mentioned earlier about being peaceful, and Nithi Prabhupada touches on this, he says, a Vaishnava is completely peaceful and simply spends his time chanting japa on his beads. Whoever speaks in this way only reminds bananas. And he says, eating and sleeping nicely, enjoying the good life, they remain free from personal inconvenience. But for a true Vaishnava, it is unacceptable to live without actively showing mercy to fallen souls.
Well, it's quite interesting because these cowherd boys and cows, buffalo and goats, they're way beyond anything we could call peace. Far, far, far beyond. Peace is achieved when you're above the modes of material nature and you realize that you're an eternal soul that can't be hurt or killed in any way. You know, if the soul is quite powerful. If you realize that you're a powerful spiritual being that can't be harmed by anything or anyone, and you're eternal, how would you ever have any fear? So they're above that platform. So the so-called fear that they're having is just play. It's just pleasure. Just like people are safe in their living room and they turn on a scary movie. Why do people watch scary movies? Do people watch scary movies? Are there scary movies? Do they exist? Do people pay money to go see them? All varieties, like adventure movies where Superman saves somebody, or even horror movies, Ghastly Rasa. So what happens? Or reading a book. You know, if you're reading a book that has a little scariness in it, or watching a film that's scary, or a theater, you're experiencing two things at the same time. You're safe. You're just in your chair. You're safe. But you're experiencing some fear at the same time. But it's just exciting. People pay money for that, don't they? Or you go on, people go on a ride in an amusement park, you're on a roller coaster, and you're safe. It wouldn't be any fun if you were actually in danger. You know, of course, I guess some people do that too. Like mountain climbing without a rope. But even people who do what they call extreme sports, they try to be safe. They have certain equipment and all this kind of stuff. Their goal is not to get injured and die. It's not trying to get injured and die. They're trying to get the thrill along with safety at the same time, to have both. So that's some idea of what they're experiencing in Leela. They know Krishna's going to take care of everything. Of course he is. And they know that they're indestructible. So there's no danger. But it's an adventure. Yeah. So there's a wonderful quote by Bhaktivinoda Thakur where he says this material world is also one of the pastimes of the Lord. And that we can choose to find exaltation in participating in Krishna's Leela. And if we experience suffering in this world, he said, that's our choice and not Krishna's fault. So you can see your life right now as being part of Krishna's Leela. This is not just something future. There's a lot of ways you can understand ISKCON, depending on if you're in the modes of goodness, passion, ignorance, or transcendental. You can understand ISKCON in the mode of ignorance too, by the way. And ISKCON exists also on that level if you choose to see it that way. But Prabhupada said that ISKCON is Mahaprabhu's Leela. If you choose to see it that way. It's a matter of our consciousness. If your consciousness is in the mode of ignorance, then you'll see ISKCON as a political organization where people vie for money and power. and prestige. And frankly, people who are in ISKCON who are in the mode of ignorance are actually doing that. And that's what you'll see. If you're in the mode of passion, then you'll see that ISKCON is a society for establishing varnashram and culture and dharma, which it also is. If you're in the mode of goodness, you'll see that ISKCON is a vehicle for my purification, for my liberation, which it also is. If you're in transcendental consciousness, you'll see ISKCON is part of the mission of Mahaprabhu, which it also is, or ISKCON is the leader of Mahaprabhu, which it also is. It's all of those things. Depends on how you're relating with it, what you're going to get out of it. So you can also see our work here as Mahaprabhu's, that you're in Mahaprabhu's Leela. Try seeing your life as that you're already in Krishna's adventure. I'm always safe. I'm eternal. I can't be hurt. Krishna's always going to save me. Everything's going to be all right. Always. But Krishna likes adventure. He enjoys it. And frankly, so do I as a soul. I also like adventure. So let me take it as an adventure. But yeah, we're not interested just in merging into the Brahman or even just Shantaras. You know, we're not interested in merging into the Brahman like a Jnana Yogi or just Shantaras like a Dhyan Yogi. We're not even interested, maybe some of us are, in going to Vaikuntha where we can just, you know, always enjoy a peaceful life, the peaceable kingdom. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.